friends. Welcome back to Ask Robin Black, episode 4. How is it episode 4 already? That is so crazy. This is a show where you send me in questions and I answer them. That's what it was going to be. It takes about a month to build one of these boards in a busy place and to book the time and stuff. So we had an idea and that's all it was. Literally. We got a blue sign, hashtag Ask Robin Black. We'll take some questions. And it's taken a shape already. And I'm really grateful for this show. I really, really am. I really, really, truly have appreciated getting to do this. I think if you saw the first one, I told you that the plan that Chase and I have is to do this live. I think the goal will be within a few weeks to do this live. And then we'll be able to interact with you as we go, and that'll be super cool. But it's been great. I think on some level, I thought, you know, the last few years of my life, my real study has been about fighting. And we talked about a little bit before. Fighting is a technical thing. We did a lot of technical analysis years back. You could stay there at any time, but if you want to look at it a different way, there's an emotional component, there's a psychological component, there's a growth component, heavy growth component, and that's something we've looked at, and I think we're going to look at a lot. And there's a philosophical component to self-study and getting better. And that's something I'm really about right now, I'm really interested in. And the questions and the feedback, the people seem to be interested in that too, in different ways of looking at yourself and how you do things and how you train things and how we look at fighting as a tool to study, to learn about ourselves. And that is a real thing. That is an absolute real thing. You don't have to look deep. You don't have to know a lot about it. When you see John and I talked to Justin Gaethje today, World Series of Fighting champion, a guy never lost, and every moment of every fight is something special. And he said, people really can feel and appreciate effort. And it's true, we do. Why do we cheer for athletes? Why do we cheer for that moment where even that woman sings that note that he's not sure she's going to get? It's that effort. We cheer for it. And so that idea that we look at it and it inspires something in us, we see in everything, in every fighting and in anything type of performance that we watch. And then you see somebody get hurt and come back from it. There's the obvious broad things you can take from watching fighting, martial arts, combat sports. But then there's some subtler things about how they develop and how they change and how they overcome things. And we can apply those to our lives. And a lot of the feedback has been about that. And that's really thrilling to me. That is thrilling to me. And a lot of the questions today are about those kinds of things, and I am super pumped to look into them. I'm not any kind of expert on philosophy. The things we're talking about are things that I've read and studied through the study of martial arts and the study of experts in martial arts, and we're trying to find ways to apply them to life. If you want to find historical or academic philosophy, definitely someone will be much better at that than I. But I think I can do my best to look at how fighters and coaches and people and we can study them to see how they make improvements and how they change themselves and how they optimize their performance as athletes and as people and all of that. And I think that's something we should do for a while, and I'm excited to do it. That's what we've done, a bit of that, and it's been really cool, and I'm really grateful for this. I really thank you for the feedback and the encouragement. People have been really nice to me about this, and I really, truly do appreciate it. Let's take some questions. Let's get right at it. So the Akosombo says, hashtag Ask Robin Black, is it necessary for a fighter to be completely honest with himself, or is some degree of delusion helpful? Maybe the best question we've had yet. And I've got great ones today. It's really exciting. Is it necessary for a fighter to be completely honest with himself, or is some degree of delusion helpful? Okay, we're going to look at that. We're going to dig into it as best we can with whatever data, knowledge, and study we have on every level. But we're going to also take, and each of us will say this, is it necessary for me to be completely honest with myself, or is some degree of delusion helpful? Let's give that some real thought. It's important to be honest with yourself. You got to figure the answer to that is yes. And that much of your life should be spent trying to figure out what honest really means. And that's tricky. How do you even know if you're lying to yourself? How do you know what it is to be honest with yourself? You say things to yourself all the time. I'm too fat. I'm too slow. I'm not good enough. That's not honest. None of that is true. That's shit that's been developed from the time that you were domesticated. People are domesticated very much the same way as we domesticate animals. This is what happens to all of us. If Pluto, my dog, poops on the rug, I say, bad dog, I'll yell at him, I'll intimidate him. Some people will hit their animals. I don't hit my dog. And if he does something great, I say, good boy, Pluto, good boy. And I'll give him a treat and give him lots of love and encouragement. If he shat on the rug, and I say, good boy, Pluto, good boy, and I gave him a treat, he would learn that pooping on the rug is good. And we do exactly the same thing. And it, and some of this I gleaned from a book. Again, I mentioned it on episode 3, The Four Agreements. My good friend Tracy Trudeau, who is a PhD in psychology, recommended it to me. And it is, the Toltecs were a people in Mexico, and they had their own very base philosophical beliefs, some of which originates with the idea that we are always dreaming. So at night, we know we're dreaming. We close our eyes and we go off to some place and something happens and we wake up and go, wow, that was a crazy dream. But we're dreaming right now. The difference is we have awake information. So we take information. Chase says something to me. How I interpret that information, some of that is a dream. Some of that is I'm applying meaning to it. I'm projecting my own feelings of it. And that is pushed onto, that's a dream. That happened with our parents, that happened with our teachers, that happened with the kids in the schoolyard, and those things reinforce these lies that you would tell yourself. So just figuring out what it is to be honest with yourself is hard enough. That's an ongoing struggle. That's an ongoing work that we have to do. I'm going to pick up Bruce Lee's book because quotes, we're not looking at this as if it's some religion. We're taking quotes at a very intelligent man, somebody who studied himself, studied philosophy and meditation, and that. And we're going to take some of his quotes and we're going to just look at them. So we're going to take self-knowledge and see what Bruce Lee said. The first thing we have here, know thyself. It is later than you think. Know thyself. So later than you think. Whatever age you are, it's like, Jesus, it would have been better to know more about myself sooner. We should get right the fuck on this, right? The answer within. Instead of establishing rigid rules and separative thoughts, we should look within ourselves to see where our particular problems lie and our cause of ignorance. You see, ultimately, all type of knowledge simply means self-knowledge. And this isn't done yet, but I wanted to think about that. All type of knowledge is self-knowledge. Anything that you gather, any piece of information you use does make yourself have more knowledge. Therefore, you have, that's some knowledge of self. You must look for the truth yourself and directly experience every minute detail for yourself. And that includes stepping back and looking at yourself do stuff and saying, what am I doing? Why am I doing that? And it's not easy. It's hard. It's an ongoing thing. Let's see what else he has. The liberating quality of self-knowledge. When you're faced with looking at your own life with awakened eyes, you will have increased a bit in your knowledge of yourself. So looking at your life with awakened eyes, paying attention to the fact that much of your life, you wander through being a stimulus response animal. Something happens, you get mad. Something happens, you get happy. You need to go to the bathroom, you do. You're horny, you address that. You're thirsty, you address that. A lot of us go through life that way. And when you look at yourself, hey, man, I wasn't even thinking about what I did. Why did I yell at that person who cut me off? These are things we try to work on as best we can. You will have an increased a bit in the knowledge of yourself. In other words, your mental and physical abilities will become clear to you. And knowledge of anything outside yourself is only superficial and very shallow. To put it another way, self-knowledge has a liberating quality. Okay, I think that's probably the best part of that. Self-knowledge has a liberating quality. When you know what's going on, if you study deep enough and ask yourself why, and I randomly said I'm too fat, I'm too stupid, I'm too whatever, if you could figure to the point that why you're saying that is because somebody else said something that they didn't mean. It was not personal. Your mother was exhausted when she yelled at you that you have a terrible singing voice when you were singing happily and you never sung again. She didn't do that because she wanted you to never sing again. She did that because she was stressed out and exhausted and tired. So once you look deep enough into yourself, you can be honest. And that takes a lot of work. And that's an ongoing thing, and it should be an ongoing thing forever. The more you can figure out who you are and what you're doing, how could that be a bad thing? Now you can look at yourself and go, that's my fault. I shouldn't have reacted that way. This is just something someone did. I don't have the control over what they did, but I have the control over how I react to it. Anyways, I've gone way off topic. Fighter, honest with himself. So should we be honest with ourselves? Yeah, we should. It makes us have the ability to properly assess in reality. So let's take the simplest example. Somebody who is a blue belt in jiu-jitsu tells themselves that they're a black belt. What will happen? How will that lack of honesty affect them? Well, they will go in and take fights with people that will crush them. They will not get better, because if you believe you're amazing, how can you get better? And I think that maybe is what I've been talking around with honesty of a fighter. If you cannot honestly look at yourself and see where you are in the grand scheme of things, especially if you can see it with sort of a beginner's quality, we'll look at it and always have that beginner's perspective, then you'll be able to get better. If you believe you're amazing, you're done. We talked about that before. That idea that if you can't look at it and really see how much the future has, and honesty is it the ability to tell reality too. You know, if you think if whoever is the best in the world at anything, if Demetrius Johnson were to say to himself, I am the perfect martial artist. I am perfect. He is currently very good. He may not train as hard, so he actually may atrophy and become less good. And he is not perfect. Somebody else in a chase for perfection will eventually pass him. So you have to be honest. Now, there's a sort of a second part. Is some degree of delusion helpful? A degree of delusion can accidentally work. You know, if you don't believe, if you have no idea what this guy is capable of and you close your eyes and throw a punch because you're deluded enough to go in, it's possible that could work. But it's not something we can bank on. It's not something we can believe in. It's not something. So, and I think there's an interesting thing that we'll get to later on about challenges. When you go and you take a challenge that's way, way too strong for you and you're delusional, is it possible that, and I'm not picking on CM Punk, he's just a very easy example, and I'm not judging him because the guy wanted to fight and he took on what he took on, but that would delusion have helped him? I mean, no, unless it accidentally did. You know what I mean? The delusion, the one in a thousand times that he could win that fight, that one is the delusion would help it. But realistically speaking, deluding yourself stunts your growth. Really interesting on that. Very interesting thing that I have here. So this is from a post by a guy named Alex Viada. Alex Viada is known as this sort of multi-interdisciplinary athlete who runs super marathons and is an incredible powerlifter. And those two things are unrelated in how they are trained and how you adapt your body. And in most people would say, and this isn't a conversation for another day, that if we make you stronger, we cannot make you more endurance. So John Jones was powerlifting and was like, oh, it's going to make him slower. It's any number of things. These are not true. This man is a walking example of that. Super marathons, 100 miles, and powerlifting, a world-class level powerlifter. And so that's what makes him interesting. But so he made this post, and it does relate to what we're saying. There is nearly nothing to be learned from attempting a challenge so far outside of your skill level that you barely complete it. This happens all the time in a social media-driven world, but one can't place the blame on social media. The human desire to one-up the other or prove something to oneself drives this nonsense. An incremental challenge is something that needs to be worked towards. Related to the training itself needs to be manageable and challenging, and it needs to be something your body can slowly adapt to improve upon. The event itself should be something you are, if anything, over-prepared for. One doesn't sit for their board exam after the first year of pre-med. Of course you don't. Any test, any competition is meant to assess mastery and push your limits, not exceed your limits so far that you need to pull a rabbit out of your ass to complete it. And this happens everywhere. Everybody's been guilty of it. People want to run a full marathon before they have the proper mechanics to run a solid 10K. They want to sign up for grueling ultras with no trail running experience, et cetera, et cetera. The net result is nothing but negative. Performance is poor, placing a terrible, cutoffs are barely missed or anything. The athlete has learned nothing about training for an event that is inside his or her skill level. Injuries happen, motivation wears. There's little tangible result besides participation. Okay, so, and why would anyone do that? Because it is very challenging to take on things that can be done. And work to, I'm sorry, I got something in my eye. And work to the limit that you are capable of, achieve that, settle there, barely allow yourself time for a pat on the back, and then move to the next and move to the next. That's something that requires a commitment to mastery that is real. Going in and saying, yeah, sure, I'll fight in the UFC is not. Okay, so, and it is a type of not putting yourself out there. Of course I lost. I mean, this is a win just by showing up. I had no business in there with them. That is a smaller test and less hard on your emotional state than fighting a fight you could win. This is an easier way out in its own way. Anyways, that type of honesty, you gotta have it. If you don't have it, you can't progress. You can't learn anything. And you have to be able to look at yourself and see where you're weak and see where you keep making mistakes and be honest about it, you know? Du Ho Choi was immediately looking for his weakness and flaws because of the Cub Swanson fight. The belief that he had that he could win that fight, that was at a level to win that fight, was wrong. And so he goes back and he's honest with the change. Conor McGregor's well documented. That night he looked for his flaws in it. If you can blame yourself and truly find what went wrong, that is your fault or your contribution or your lack of preparation, you can fix it. So that type of honesty has to be there. I hope I answered that question. If I'm being honest right now, since honesty is the topic, I am exhausted. You're watching this over Christmas. There's some fancy Christmas tins. This is the end of a 15-hour day of a 65-hour week of just more and more focus on what we're doing and study and 12-hour days. And I love it. But honesty, I have a policy, a agreement with myself to always do my best. Always do my best. If you make that agreement with yourself, it's a really powerful thing. But one thing about it, honesty is a part of it. Because your best is your best right now. And if you look at it that way, it's far less intimidating and far more achievable. And this is real. This is valuable. Your best is your best in the circumstances. Your best when exhausted, or your best when blind in one eye, or your best when you can't breathe because your nose is broken, or your best when you got in a fight with your wife, or your best, do you know what I mean? Doing your best is the best you can do right now, no more and no less. And the best you can do right now, you can always do that. You can do the best you can do at the moment. And that is something we can do. That's something that's achievable. And it's something I don't believe so much in New Year's resolutions. I'm sure we'll do one of these on December 31st after the Ronda and Dominic fights. And I'm sure that will come up and we'll discuss it. But I think the type of resolution you can make, I don't think you should wait till New Year's either. If you're watching this on the 24th, you should make a December 24th resolution. Always do your best. Just remember what that means. Doesn't mean always do better than you've ever done, because what your best was then, when you had 14 hours of sleep and you had just worked out and you'd been eating brilliantly for a week and everything, you had some momentum. You shouldn't be a slave to momentum, but you allowed momentum to support you. That best can't be achieved on 1 hour sleep in 48 hours. It can't be achieved when you have pneumonia. Your best is the best you can do at that right then. And that's what I'm going to do right now. That felt really good. I hope that's okay. Okay, this is cool. I forgot this was here, but it relates. Thoughts on how top fighters maintain beginner's mind while believing they're more skilled than opponents? Okay, beginner's mind. That's another great question. This is really cool stuff. So the idea of beginner's mind is something that you can maintain always. We talked about, oh, never believing you're a black belt. Even when you're a black belt, though, that you have become a white belt. That idea, that's beginner's mind. What is a beginner? A true beginner, a beginner who cares, a motivated beginner. Because there is something lower before that, and that maybe I'll try to tie this in. We often talk about passion. You got to find your passion. Part of finding your passion is doing things that interest you. You're not going to be sitting around somewhere and be suddenly like, oh my God, flower arrangements. Flower arrangements. You've never even looked at flowers. It's not going to hit you. You have to, there could be 5, 6, 7, 20, 100 things that you might find a little interesting, and you start doing them. You go and investigate them, and some of them connect to others, and they lead you somewhere. And then you may find your passion. And when you find your passion as a beginner, and when you find, if you're just going to find it, and you eventually do, or that interest delivers you down a road that brings you somewhat to passion, and you start to get passionate, what's a passionate beginner? Desperately curious. Desperately curious, need to know all the answers. And each answer leads to a new question. And each question has an answer that leads to two more questions. Anybody who studied jujitsu can remember the first, if they loved it, because you can study things and go, man, that is not for me. And that's cool. And that's important too, because that's in the process of eliminating things that do not appeal to you. And you got to do that. But yeah, so if you did not fall in love with jujitsu, you'd be like, I don't know what these guys are talking about. I was wearing the white outfit and I was crawling around on the ground. Ah, it smelled like sweat. I did not like it. And that's cool. That's very valid. But if you were somebody who fell in love with that or anything else, playing guitar, there's a million examples. The new job that you got, cooking, it could be anything. The beginner's mind suddenly realizes you know almost nothing. But this is a giant thing. This is an enormous spiderweb, roadmap, circulatory system, whatever, of information that you are only barely getting started down. And that's so exciting because the curiosity carries on forever and each new thing leads to a brand new universe of unknown. A year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, whatever it is, whatever it is, whatever you're studying, depending on how long that takes to consume a certain amount of information or how much information has already been deciphered by the people who came before you, you can lose that because there are less breakthroughs every day. A beginner has all these breakthroughs. Oh my God, I didn't even know what a Kimura was. Now look at it. I can almost do one. I know that if I do, you know, and it's exciting. Beginner's mind is when you can purposefully keep your mind that way. Purposefully keep it that way. And that is a muscle that you train. Curiosity is a muscle. If you're very fortunate, and we all have different things that we have a little more of or a little less of, that's come up through some is genetic and some is what how we've been raised and what we've been exposed to, what we've gone and exposed ourselves to. Curiosity is something that grows. It grows. It continues to grow if you let it. Babies are all curious. All of them. If you've ever seen one, they're like trying to shove things in their mouth and shove it in their ear. And they're just trying to figure everything out. And then over time, that's taught out of us. We're not the school system, most of our jobs, most of those things. They're creating structures, reproducible structures that's easy to manage and easy to you know, score and study and rate. And then so we're taught not to do that anymore. But you can bring that back out. And the beginner's mind is a great way to look at it. Child's mind is another way. Children are curious, man, until it's beaten out of us. So you just bring that back. I think, I think there's some more. I had some other Bruce Lee stuff with that. But I think that's – so the question was thoughts on how you maintain beginner's mind. I love the hows and the whys instead of just, well, if you want to be a better fighter, you got to keep – Beginner's mind. Demetrius Johnson, if he keeps beginner's mind, how? That's a great question. And all of the answers to this kind of hows come back to forming habits and purposeful training and self-study. And there are ways that you do all of these things. A journal is a really good one. You journal what you learned. Because if you can go at the end of the day, and it's going to take you 20 minutes, and I know you don't have 20 minutes, but what if 20 minutes every day would make your life better in every way? If somebody could promise you that, you'd take it. Right? And I think most people can promise you that. If you wake up in the morning and take 20 minutes to outline what you're thinking, what you might like to do, what your goals are today, what you're, maybe what you're grateful for, that's really valuable. And at the end of the day, you recapped what you did and what you accomplished and what you learned. There are different ways. If you listen to Mentality of Combat Sports, I do with David Mullins, sports psychology consultant. He has some very specific questions, for beginners with the end of the day journal. But if you can look at the end of the day and go, if you just leave now and you go grab some beers with your friends, that's great. You did some things. But if you take those extra 20 minutes and you write down, you're like, oh my God, you're right. I did that 18 times and I couldn't do this yesterday, but today I had a breakthrough and I learned this. And that raised a really big question. You know, I might have forgot that question if I didn't write it down. It's a really powerful and valuable thing. And that's just one way, you know, creating habits. We'll talk about that in the future about creating habits. And there's a question about morning rituals. I don't know how deep we'll get today. But you also notice a lot of the things we're talking about are not related to a fight card today. That's really fun. And because you're going to watch this over Christmas if you're watching this, or, you know, in between Sacramento and UFC 207. But that's a really great question. And let's start today by at least a lot of these things. How is the thing we want to get to? But first, you got to know it exists. So once you know it exists, beginner's mind. Never heard of that. Or maybe you did. A lot of you will have. But that sure makes sense. Take a look at things as if you were a child or as if you're brand new to them, and keep that perspective and nurture that perspective and be possessive about that perspective. Don't allow it to leave you. And then go back and study what you've done and cultivate it. But first, you got to know a lot of these things exist, and you got to be in a state where you're like, I want to do that. As soon as you start wanting to accomplish something, what do you have that you didn't have yesterday? You knew it existed and you knew it's something you wanted. And now that it's something you wanted, you can go on the old Google machines and say beginner's mindset. And you'll find 40 things. The next thing you'll develop when you do that, one of the things you will very quickly, as soon as you start using books and the web and stuff to spend, yeah, we still want to watch cats and, you know, playing piano, and we still want to watch people's pants fall down, and we still want to watch football. But some of our time, we're going to start excitedly consuming, you know, ways to optimize and ways to learn things. Another thing you'll need real quick is the ability to sift through and figure out what's true and what's real. And that thing itself will give you other value in your life, because there's a lot of things on the internet in particular, but out there, that are not true. And there's a lot of things, like we said in the first one, that you're telling yourself that's based on lies you've had since you were very young. So that's, but knowing that and now searching for truth and being skeptical and saying not everything I read is true, because most of what you read isn't true, it allows you to start thinking that way and exercising that muscle. Okay, let's keep going. Robin Black, to which degree do you see fighting as a form of expressing yourself and a source of self-growth? Hashtag ask Robin Black. Okay, great question. Great, really great question. I like that we put those two together. Because the study of anything is about the study of self-growth. I think we had a quote on that from the man earlier. If you study and you gather information, you learn something, even if you learn what not to do, or if you tried something you failed and now you know that may not work unless you change some of the conditions, you're learning and you're growing. So the study of anything to mastery, to the degree where you're seeking mastery, you will have self-growth. That's just what we're doing here. I think that's our number one directive. If your number one directive is to grow, then everything in life, your future is automatically better. You're going to be smarter. You're going to be fitter. You're going to be better at being a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever. That's just where you're going. Once you realize that that's a very naturally achievable thing, and that we would do that if our society wasn't so oddly structured, and some of the great that comes with new technology and some of the great that comes with the speed of change of our society comes with some bad. And some of that bad is it hinders our natural tendency to want to grow. And for a lot of reasons. You know, if you're on Twitter for 4 hours a day, that will hinder your ability to go out and learn things. You know, it's a time waster. And there's still value in it, but more is not more value. When we live in a society that's never had so much entertainment at our fingertips, hundreds and hundreds of hours per minute of content uploaded to YouTube, per minute, every minute, and that's out there, and you know, 500 or 1,000 television channels and all of these things. And then you've got the cigarettes and Doritos and all these things slowly trying to take a bit of money from you as well as hinder you. All of these things are naturally occurring things that hinder your growth. But by nature, we grow. We want to grow. And the fact that high school stops at 17 or 18 and university stops at 4 years or 8 years shouldn't stop you from growing. And so the martial arts or yoga or like music or a cooking class or reading of any kind, it's all growth. So martial arts and fighting is a huge one. As with anything with the body, and if you take something that you change your body and track the growth and understand the growth and study the growth, it's huge. If something changes and you learn something about your mind and you study it and you track it, that's huge. Martial arts is the two of them together. So it's one of these ones that you get a lot of growth out of. And it happens. You study yourself. And if somebody asks you, even you're doing a deadlift, and they teach you how when you roll your shoulders back and bring it down, and they teach you cues that eventually your body does better, then you lift a heavier weight and you keep track of it. You lift 240 pounds, and then we made these changes, and we trained you this way, and now you lift 250. Then we do these things, and now you've learned technique, and you become stronger, you lift 270. You just right there, you have tangible proof that hard work makes you better. And that's easy to apply then to anything, because it's proven. You've proven it with becoming better at anything. So anytime you become better at anything, it helps you believe that that's possible in all things. And that's why one of the reasons the martial arts is so good. It's a form of expressing yourself, okay? So self-growth is the purpose. So growth is our purpose. What are we doing here? We're trying to get better, smarter, nicer, kinder, learn the truth more. Be smarter, have a better mind, be healthier. That's what we're doing here. If you, there are all kinds of forces that are at work to try to make you go the other way. And so you have to learn about those. And you have to learn and understand them. Beer is really good. But beer every day, we know, all day, we know is bad. And that's true of all these little forces that are out there. You have to learn to manage them, and you have to learn what they are, or they'll get in the way of you growing, becoming a little faster and a little more efficient, and your body a little healthier, and you a little smarter, and you a little nicer, and you learned to fix those flaws, you know, those things that you do bad. I just freaked out today, and this is a big weakness of mine. It's a huge weakness, and I've been consciously working at it, and I'm still not acing it. We're talking about, and when you talk on the desk, unlike here, this is just me chatting with my friends, which is why I value it so much. On the desk, I have a role to play where you are encouraged to make grand statements. Now, nobody says, go do it. Nobody says, by the way, you haven't been making grand statements. It's just in the nature of television. We start to understand our job on television is to create engagement and debate. So that opens the door a bit, but I can't blame that on what I'm about to tell you. But I purposefully go out of my way and call people who work in the MMA media. I call them tomato cans. I say they're idiots. I mock them. And that's a weakness on my part. That is a flaw. It's bad and it's cruel and it's mean and it's not true. And, I don't know why I can't, you know, well, you want to immediately point your analysis back at yourself. Why would I do that? And some of it is my own weakness. Some of it is my own insecurity, or maybe some self-doubt, or maybe some ego that wants, why can't people see that there's this, there's any of those things? And then you see that sometimes you do it, sometimes you don't do it, and sometimes you're very much in a good mood. You would never do that. Why would you be so condescending or rude to a good human being, who many of whom you've met and are very nice people? Why would you do that? Then you identify certain factors. When I'm tired, I'm in a worse, I am not as good of a person. When I'm exhausted, or I'm tired, or I'm stressed, or I'm in a rush, or I feel sick, I'm weak, and my weaknesses come out. I don't have control over the things that I would like to do to be a better person. Okay. Well, you better own that. You can't go, well, then I guess if I'm tired and they're all tomato cans, fuck them. No, that's still on you. You don't make excuses. If that's so, you better not get tired. You better understand how to manage yourself, or you better recognize it before you go up and go to say hurtful things about people, many of whom you like very much. You go in and say, this is one of those tired ones. Let's monitor ourselves. We have good intentions and a positive view of people, and understand that rude and hurtful and gossipy things about other people is negative. And to be honest, the thing that I end up talking about when I'm saying those things is about their gossip. And then my response, gossip. So I am doing the very thing that I am not liking. So reflected in myself is this thing that I'm looking at. And then I go out and I'm even worse. So you have to go in and figure these things out. Because in the end, what you say, what I say when I do that job, that is my expression. I used to be able to express it in fighting. Some people express it in the way they walk down the street. Some people express art in the way that they dress. Some people express art in the way they carry a conversation or tell a story. And fighting is an expression of art. It's an expression of who you are and what you are. And my job has become talking about fighting. And I'm very proud of that job, and I'm very proud to express that art and share that art. But you better look at yourself, and right now I am. Right now, in this setting, I hope that's okay. I'm realizing that of all the things that I do and say, that is the one that makes me ashamed. And I think I'm going to pledge right now, I'm going to make every effort to never do that again. I'm going to say it to whatever amount of friends that are watching right now. I'm going to purposefully make an effort to never say hurtful things about people who report on mixed martial arts. What I should say is make a really intended, purposeful desire to not say hurtful things about anybody. That's better. But I'm going to do my very best. I mean it. I don't know how we got there, but I mean it. Let's change the subject. But I mean that. Yep. You've helped me right now by sitting there, being on the other side of that camera. You've helped me work out a thing that I'm not proud of, that I do, that I wasn't really sure why I do, and I still don't know exactly why, but it's not right, and I shouldn't do it, and I won't. I'll make a real commitment. I just picked up Joe's cup. Do you consider Joe Rogan a mentor, is the next question. Yes, I do. Joe was a mentor. So we talked about mentors before, and we will talk about them again because they're very, very important. And some mentors are people that you meet and can ask questions and follow and study and work with. And other ones literally are people in the world. And we've talked about not copying people and why that isn't good. And actually, I'm going to go back and look at growth and expression from Bruce Lee in just a moment. But at the same time, you can study people who you don't know. And so Joe was definitely somebody who was a mentor before I'd ever met him. And there are others, there's plenty, and you'll have some too, and that's okay. Just don't copy them. It's copying them is not what you want to do. But he was, and then I got to know him. He brought had said very nice things about my breakdown, brought me on the show. I told you I'll always thank him for getting Dana White to notice my work. But yes, he's a mentor. He was a mentor before I met him. When I get a chance to chat with him, it's always in hopes of asking him a question, and he'll be a mentor if he moves to Mars and I don't see him anymore. Okay, so I hope it's okay. I'm jumping all around here. People have said that to me and sent me messages and given me very, very good feedback, some very organized feedback that's been very helpful. People have mentioned that they like it when I jump all around, but there's got to be a limit to that. There's a point at whatever it is you do, you get feedback. You're like, well, I love it when fighters throw water bottles. Okay, great. So we should just have a water bottle throwing contest then. We shouldn't. They don't need to fight. You see what I mean? There's an obvious – when you take it to such an extreme, there's a point at which everything is no longer better. More is not better. More time on Facebook is not better. Facebook has some value, but more time on Facebook is not better. And more tangents, maybe better. But there's a point at which it's like, I don't understand what you're saying, Robin Black. Please, less tangents. So let me know when I get there. I could be there already. So self-expression and self-growth. Okay, self-expression. Head towards self-expression and self-actualization, and not just a means of mediocre functioning or repetitious drilling on a chosen pattern. I think Bruce was probably talking about doing patterns at the time and going through the same thing. And so that was very martial arts applicable. You move towards expressing the fight and not towards just how many times can you step, hit, pivot, move, low kick. In Thailand, you make throw 1,000 low kicks a day for life, and that doesn't mean it's bad, but it can't be all that you do. The importance of self-expression. Express the truth of your vision. One must not merely copy, but try to convey the significance of what you see. Copying is a real virus that we have. Monkey see, monkey do has been very valuable for our ancestors. It's been very valuable for passing on how to build something or how to eat or how to hunt or any of those things. But that's mutated now to the point that, you know, every single thing that you see on TV is copied from something else. So I watched last night a few episodes of some kind of home renovation show with my wife. I don't know what it's called. Home something or other. Not a renovations. They're buying homes. So they go and they look at three houses, and then they have to go and buy them. I watched three of these shows. Now, we weren't really watching them. We were literally vegging on the couch, petting the dog they were on. And I immediately had a curiosity, not about the houses, but about the people. So when I see, if we go and we interview Chase outside of the Maple Leafs arena, and they shove a microphone in his face and they say, Chase, how do you think your team did? And he goes, oh, you know, we got a lot of pucks on the net. And, you know, when another team comes into your barn, you gotta defend your keeper. And, if you just keep putting pucks on the net, good things will happen. Where the fuck did you learn those things? Do you know why? They all say it. They literally all say the same things. Every one of them. And so on this show, they went in and now, if I talk to every person in this house and I talk to everyone that's watching this and I say, when you look at the front of someone's house, what do you say? Oh, yeah, I like it. It's red. You know, oh, that's a really nice door. Oh, that window's really nice. But, well, if these fuckers don't, every last one of them say, oh, it's got great curb appeal. It's got great curb appeal. Like, you literally have seen this show 8 times. Then they go inside and they go, oh, I guess this is the master. And then they go into the living room and they go, this would be great for entertaining. Whoever says, hey, Chase, what's your living room like? Is it great for entertaining? He's like, he doesn't know what to say. He's like, God, Robin goes off and things. But nobody speaks that way. Nobody. Nobody says, you know, oh, this is a great outdoor space. You know, but then these people go and they're put in this situation and they parrot exactly. And so whatever a number of shows I've ever seen, you go to the front, you say this has great curb appeal. Then you walk inside and you go, wow, you know, it's an open concept. And then you go into this, oh, man, that's got a great outdoor space. Like, why would you do that? Because you think you're supposed to do that. We do it in television, and every single commentator that I've ever seen that comes up to do their first gig, they will use the terms knockout power in both hands. He's got a posture up here, which they don't posture up much anymore because the guy will stand up, but they'll still say it. Oh, he's looking for that second hook. They will, every one of them, you know, like, they'll say every Roganism that's ever been said. They will copy every last one. And everyone does this. Everyone in society does this. And then all of a sudden, there'll be the odd, rare individual that gets this concept that maybe I shouldn't say knockout power in both hands. Maybe I should call that an amazing, shiny, red front of a house instead of it has great curb appeal. We just do it. I don't know why we do it, but it's a sickness. And you cannot, whatever it is you do, so you cannot go in a world where there's thousands of people doing something and say, well, I'm going to be the thousandth and first to say knockout power in both hands. Man, that cage has great curb appeal or whatever. And yet we all do it. So you just, like, have mentors. And that was something he said there. Understand the essence of the thing. And so often the essence is, that's unique. And your answer is, I'll copy it. Unique is unique. If you see something unique and you learn that because it was unique, it was great, now you should figure out how to do something unique, not how to be just like it. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So you just try not to copy people, and you just mentors. You see what you can learn when you're watching them, and you take something away. I hope I'm not being grumpy because I'm tired. I just thought of that from going back to that. It's like you get exhausted or there's some variable. If you recognize that, I'm recognizing that I'll go a certain way and look for the variable, look for the pattern. The pattern is when I haven't slept enough or I'm too tired, I don't behave the way that I should. So then you better either get the sleep or be aware of it and deal with it. And sometimes I think about Henry Rollins. Do you know who Henry Rollins is? If you're under 30, you might not. But I think in a lot of cases, there are times where you just go, what would Henry Rollins say here? And the answer is usually man the fuck up. Just man up. Because that's what Henry Rollins would do. Okay. Can you talk about the amount of time and other qualities that affect achieving a mastery of skills? It's another really good question. So what is mastery? I mean, what is it? We know it when we see it. We know Beyonce is a master. We know it. We look, Beyonce, yep, that's a master. You know it. It's some level that is rare and right on the edge of what anybody else can do. And it's seemingly perfect, transcending even the things that they do. You know? And mastery changes. When BJ Penn was the lightweight champion of the world, that was mastery of mixed martial arts. Now, mastery itself, the top levels of it has grown to such a degree that would be very good. Now, if he was existing and growing through that phase as in this time, his mastery would have been much higher too. But mastery is that true pinnacle, and there's a comfort in it, and yet an unwillingness to settle, and it isn't a destination. It is an ongoing travel. It's a journey that probably never ends. If there's mastery for a moment, mastery itself raises and the master must raise. Or they're a master now and some of the people who come up later are masters, are higher level masters. Demetrius Johnson is a higher level master than Anderson Silva was. And that you might disagree and that's okay. But Anderson Silva's pinnacle, the level of what was great has been raised. It is much higher now. And so although Anderson Silva, if existing now, would be existing in this time, time itself affects mastery. So I have this book that I really like. It's called Mastery. Robert Greene. And so he wrote, and I haven't read this other book, 48 Laws of Power. I know of its existence, and it's something about how to exist in business. And to me, I think that's a control freak, not freak is the wrong word. That is a searching for control way to, now, I haven't read the book, so this is entirely my assumption, and maybe I should never make assumptions. But it feels to me like if we are going to outline, never do this because of this, always treat this person that way, that feels very, now it may not be, depending on how you learn and how you become what you are, but it feels very wooden. I don't want to have to act a certain way. I want to act authentically. And so I shouldn't prejudge that. I should actually go back and look at it. What I've gathered about it is that it structures you in the way to interact in business. And I'm not sure that's the route I would that's for me, but we'll see about that. I should go back and read it. But so millions of readers have mastered the 48 laws of power, but the ultimate form of power is mastery itself. That's a tagline. That's how you get people to buy books. But so in here, here's the chapters, at least the outlines to mastery, you know, discover your calling, your life's task. Okay. So we're going to become, how does Demetrius Johnson or Beyonce, what was their path to mastery? They figured out truly where they could dedicate their life. And we talked about it a little bit earlier. You don't just sit around and lightning hits you and you're passionate about stuff. Find your passion. It doesn't work that way. You have to explore things. You have to try things. You have to try things, and some of them you will love. And when you were a child, maybe some of them came easy to you, and as an adult, you might go back and go, oh, God, I still love this. But whatever it is, you have to search. And it isn't the thing that you think is the coolest when you see someone else do it. Because what it's, you know, your life your calling and your life's task is the thing that you would do if somebody said you're free to do anything you want. I want to break down fights. I want to watch fights. I want to study the martial arts. That's what I want to do. That's my life's calling. So I'm very lucky to have that. And I'm lucky to found it. And I'm lucky to have had parents. And some of it is fortune. But at any point in your life, you can still go and move in that direction towards mastery. When I was a little child, they took me to gymnastics and then high diving and then martial arts and some of them all simultaneously. So I got to do that and love it as a child. But so finding that. I recommend this book super highly. I really would. It's really cool. Even if you're at some other stage of here, Demetrius Johnson could read this book and I think he'd really like it. Even though he's at the last step of it, presumably. So we have to find that. And then, chapter 2, submit to reality, the ideal apprenticeship. Okay? So if we, and he carries it over to truly learning something is finding mentors, studying people, and going into an apprenticeship phase, which is about learning. If you are a 26-year-old smart person and you think you're really, really intelligent and you're the best and you're out to prove you're the best, you haven't even done your apprenticeship phase yet. And I try to think of myself still in there because I don't want to leave it because you're still gathering all kinds of information. If you think you're an expert, you stop doing that. You're not an expert. It's a beginner's mindset. It's a beginner's mind. So if you can stay for a length of time in the apprenticeship phase or even while going up into other areas, go back and apprentice. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the way an electrician would apprentice. There are many ways to apprentice. There are many ways using multiple mentors, studying other people, searching, but it is a long process and patience is the key. If somebody said to you, if you're quiet and patient and just get good at something in 10 years, you'll be great at it. Are you able to do that? Quietly, because you go out, I get this often. People send me a thing, say, hey, this is my very first article. What do you think? And I wrote it about Ronda Rousey. Now, I might be an all right guy to send that to, because if you watch stuff, I'm interested in seeing growth, and I like talking about this kind of stuff. But you'd be better off to write 60 or 80 or 100 of them and then do that. I've seen people go and make a 5-minute video where they say, knock out power in both hands and iron sharpens iron, and then put it out with me and Rogan and Hardy and Jack Slack and whoever all in it and say, watch out, guys, I'll be at the top. And he's sitting there going, and as you know, iron sharpens iron. That's not what apprentices do. You're rushing it. You're rushing. You should go in there and look at it as a lifelong study of something that you love. And you're going to apprentice in that for as long as it takes. So the apprenticeship phase, there's 3 steps. Step 1, deep observation, the passive mode. Step 2, skills acquisition, the practice mode. And step 3, experimentation, the active mode. And presume these will take you many, many years to do. And then different strategies for how to complete apprenticeship. You value learning over money. That's real. If you can go and I can get a job where I do a 1 hour a day of talking about fighting, but I do bookkeeping the rest of the time, 55 hours a week, and that 1 hour I have nobody to oversee me and I don't get any more practice, but I make an extra $20,000 a year, I've made a grave error. I have to value learning over money. So I personally, I went and created a free podcast with my friend Jonathan, and we did it for free while I worked in a place where I could. And then I managed fighters for years for no money until Nick Denis came along and got in the UFC and was very generous. When he got knocked out of the night, he gave me 10% of it, which was very nice, very thoughtful. And then, so I made no money other than that, and I managed 20, 30 guys at different times. And then I went and carried the bucket at shows, and then I commentated anything I could for free, et cetera, et cetera. You gotta do it. You have to do it. If you're not willing to do it, then just let it, just don't seek mastery. Just go have some fun. Keep expanding your horizons. Revert to a feeling of inferiority. And that is that to beginner's mind. So this is actually interesting. It's reconnecting to that. Move towards resistance and pain. That's huge. The scarier the thing is, the more you have to do it. A big reason most of us don't do anything or don't try anything or don't go further is we're afraid of failure. We're afraid of pain. We're afraid of being embarrassed. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to fail. You're going to be in pain. Get to know those things. Get okay with it. People are going to make fun of you. My hair is ridiculous and these things are like this. You know, it's Donald Cerrone liked my shirt, but not very many people do. But I like them. People are going to say you don't know anything about doing breakdowns, even though they don't know anything about doing breakdowns. This is going to happen. So you have to move towards it. Apprentice yourself in failure. I don't remember what that, Henry Ford is the reference point. I don't remember that one as I read it. And combine the how and the what. Again, how. Not just need to do leg kicks. Yeah, great. Thanks, genius. How do we train them? When do we use them? Why? What may be the challenges of doing that? Does he know we're going to do leg kicks? And then absorb, then the mentoring, further mentoring. Now you need a mentor. You've truly apprenticed for a long period of time, gathered knowledge, tried and failed, studied, you know, spent years at something. That's when a mentor comes in. There have been the odd person sends me things and asks if I can help, and I always would try, but I know I'm working 65 hours a week, so I might not be able to. And when I send Joe a text, and he can't get back to me for days or at all because he's bow hunting, and, or I reach out to Chael or anybody else and they don't, I think, well, if I'm this busy and I'm down here on the thing, of course they're even busier. So you have to understand that. And you can't just ask for a mentor. You have to earn one. You have to bring something to them and give them something bring them some kind of value. And it isn't in the apprenticeship phase. It's after. And then see people as they are. Social intelligence. That's the one that is a tough one for me. I'm working on that. Again, that this is the 48 Laws of Power guy, and he's like, never treat your boss this way. Always treat this. Never and always feels inauthentic to me. That could be my own prejudgment. What I'd like to do is figure out how frankness and politeness work together. Polite is cool. You should be polite. You should be nice, you know. And instead of figuring out how to play games with people in your business and make sure they owe you something or make sure that they think something. Instead, just study yourself so that you know conflict is your fault. Conflict is always your fault. It could be yours and theirs, but it's always yours. You are always to be blamed in conflict because no matter what anybody said, you don't need to react poorly to it. That's the part you can work on. And when people freak out and they go, well, I called Rhonda a bitch and I hope she got killed because she was the way she treated Holly. Yeah, but you don't need to do that. Your study of yourself could slowly learn to recognize that Rhonda's likely in pain. She's likely with all the fears that you have and all the insecurities and doubts caused her to be that way. Once you see that, you're like, okay, I can control. I don't need to answer back, which is why I don't need to be so rude to people who work in fighting. I don't need to judge them. You know, that same thing that I freak out about with repetition and, you know, how everybody parrots things, that's my problem. That's not their problem. That's my problem. The fact that I see saying the same things over and over again, That's my problem. The fact that that bothers me for some reason, that's something for me to work on. So I digress. And then awaken the dimensional mind, the creative active. Now you're in it. You're doing it. You're learning how to learn. You're learning how to self-assess. You're getting reactions. You're getting valuable feedback. As you find limits, you are realizing it'll require a new you. So you have to go in now and study how to be better at the things that need to be there. And then fuse the intuitive with the rational. And that is mastery, where Demetrius Johnson's intuition in the fight is so awake, and he can almost run himself, and he can make rational choices while allowing this mastery of intuition happen by itself. So that is the overview of this book that I highly recommend, that I paid whatever $20 for. This is not given to me, or I'm not told to. I didn't make a deal to promote this book. This is something that I loved, and I think a lot of people would also love, and that's why I'm talking about it. And I hope it all made sense. So that was time and other qualities that affect achieving a mastery of skills. So I think the biggest thing about that little overview and about that thing I said about the dude who runs super marathons and lifts and does heavy deadlifting is the truth is, why do you need to go back and why are you trying to master something that you are in love with? Because it's the only thing you can master. Because it's going to take you a lifetime. You can't, there's no skipping the steps. Because, and this will go back to being completely honest with yourself. You can tell yourself that maybe you can skip a few steps. If you have a better search engine optimization than somebody, or maybe you'll copy someone's work and maybe they won't know it or whatever. None of that will get you there. We live in a giant world where there's 1,000 people doing what you want to do, and maybe 100 of them are working towards true mastery 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week for decades. And you're not going to come up with some fancy way to get around them. You're not going to stand out and bypass them. What you do is you go on a journey of mastery, and that journey of mastery is so fulfilling in and of itself, and it makes your life so much better because you're on it, that ultimately that is its own reward. If by the end of it, you ended up, because this is not a way to get a job. Seeking mastery is not going to get you a $40,000 a year job or a part-time job or $1 million a year job or whatever. This is not how you're going to do it. There's going to be 1,000 people ahead of you. You're seeking mastery for its own sake. You're seeking mastery because your life will be better. If you seek mastery, it'll give you a purpose. And every little step that you take is going to make you a better person and smarter. And you're going to learn things. You're going to fail. And in failing, study yourself. You're going to come to grips with things. You're going to learn about yourself to the point that you're seeking that mastery in other areas of your life. And it'll be easier in other areas of your life because you've learned the process and you know it's possible. Wow, these are so connected today. But this one brings us back to martial arts. What kind of time are we in here, Chase? Just past an hour. So in my long day of things today, 6:30 this morning, I was at the gym. 7:30 I was at the gym. 6:30 I was up, cold shower, meditate. I have to take medication for my thyroid, brush my teeth, take my dog out, feed my dog, go to the gym, come back from the gym. We did about an hour of chat today. I did a 3-hour show commentating deep. And I did a 1-hour, 5 rounds today podcast. And now I'm doing this. And this is the highlight of my day. The cold shower is pretty awakening. And I do love meditating. I only do 10 minutes. But then after this, I have one friend. I used to be a hairdresser at one time. And I never reached mastery in it. But I was pretty good at it. And I enjoyed it. And it served a great purpose. It was artistic and creative. And it helped me learn things. And it was a job while I was traveling with my band. And so I kind of found a way to make life work in a way that was enjoyable. And I have one client left that I haven't cut hair as a job since my very first fight, which I think is 2008. So we're going on 9 years now, but I have one client still. And his name, he is a filmmaker. And he made a movie about marijuana, and he made a movie about comic books, and he's a really cool guy. And so I got to go cut his hair after this. Otherwise, I wouldn't even be looking at the time, because this is a gift for me to be able to do. But yeah, I still have one hairdressing client later in life. But it's because I love the guy. And I get, he's an artist, a lifelong artist. And so I gather stories from him. And some of these philosophies, some have come from him, some have come from the music producers I've worked with. Some have come from my tattoo artist, Bill Baker. In any time, so this goes back to apprenticeship, you can't get, you know, Tito Ortiz to hang out with you because he's busy. But if you can come across different people at different stages of similarity in what you're seeking, good ones, if you're lucky, better or more experienced, and some younger that'll teach you new things, you got to share time with them. You have to. So you have to seek out interesting people, and part of a friendship is you're a good friend, and you know, and understand what that means. And if you give something good and you like them and they like you and you enjoy spending time together and you get something, friendships deepen and you can do cool stuff. But so anyways, yeah, I got my buddy's hair I cut. That's the ultimate tangent, I think. Is that the ultimate tangent? Chase agrees. So far today, he says. Okay, but since we talk about progress and how it occurs, now he's going to connect this back to fighting. This is Hitori Design, and I love this question. What do you think is the next counter or step in MMA? So I know what he means. We talked in another podcast about, you know, and the example that we had used at the time was I'm in somebody's guard and I can't get them to open it, so I use a can opener. That always works until somebody develops that arm bars happen from the can opener, and then I freak out and I'm like, oh my God, I can't use the can opener anymore, which is not true. You just have to learn to stop the arm bar, or better yet, penalize them. Then you can use the can opener again, how that evolves. And since everybody was working heavy coming in forward and people were pressuring forward, the Barao and Aldo and many others built a pressure game that nobody could stop. And since they couldn't stop it, they were the champs. Too bad. We're going to keep doing it. And that is good. You can add other things or change things, but when it's working, undeniably working, they did it. So people started the whole going into that. A couple years ago, I would chat with, you know, Duke Rufus or Dwayne or people, and my friend Evan, who's one of Henry Hoof's guys, and they were all working on how to counter the pressure fighter. All of them. So there was no surprise all of a sudden when pressure fighting started to fail. It was the idea that my game was predicated on forcing you to back up. If I forced you to back up, I would have all of these winning conditions created, and you couldn't answer it except with the single leg. So once I addressed that and I penalized you for attacking my single leg, then you had nothing until somebody developed and a lot of striking backing up. Stipe Miocic is a good example, but there's many. Chad Lapreeze had a beautiful knockout. Everybody can do it now. Everybody. If you can't, you're not a UFC level guy anymore. You must be able to plant and hit. Duke calls it the anchor punch. Henry has another name for it. I know Evan sometimes calls it the stomp. You're retreating stomp. The stomp itself helps land you and deliver. So these are all examples of what's going on. Then we had the prototype of fighter that, now the McGregor and the Thompson managing range and hurting you for coming in. And then we applied traditional martial arts back in, which created new things. I don't think there's as sweeping big answers now. I don't think there's as sweeping big issues. I think there are micro answers now. At least that's the next stage. Is okay, so a lot of people are doing these certain things. We need a micro answer for that. There's also little micro openings. So, for example, when a guy is down on 4 points, I'm going to land some punches, but I know I want it back up on the feet, and we've kind of just agreed that if you get to all fours, your ability to stand up is so much better than my ability to hold you down, and there are huge exceptions. Khabib is the first one that comes to mind. And in the way that the grip is applied and how you put your ear to the back allows you to tighten and light your core in such a way that takedown comes. And everybody, most guys know that now. But even with that, it's like the fight is so hard that unless you're an expert, as soon as I get 4 points, especially against the cage, I'm getting back up. And you're kind of letting me. That hole there is a hole. And in that hole, that's where limbs need to be. We're looking for limb destruction. We're looking to finish the fight. because there's an opportunity to finish the fight. And I know down at ATT, they throw the head kick as you come up there. But there are other choices. There are many choices. So now we're just looking for these holes because there, that spider web of options, it just gets more and more detailed. That's what jiu-jitsu has become. That's what everything ever becomes. That's what, you know, computing has become. There, we get more details. And so we get to this thing, this spot. Well, I'm standing up. Okay. Well, between standing up and you controlling my back against the fence, I have to get from here, to this, to drive. You do this, this. There are micro holes in there. And that's what people are going to start doing. You're going to see finishes in these odd situations now. Finishes from the back hip. You're going to see finishes from the stand up. So I think that's a big one that we're going to see. I think there'll be a big improvement. There's still lots of room for improvement in elbow range, in this clinch range. You're seeing a lot of creativity in there. And then also, so the answer, one of the bigger, the biggest sweeping one we can find is, as we created space and the creation of space and you coming into the space becomes my weapon. Jose Aldo in 13 seconds is our prime example, but there's hundreds of examples. Now the solve to that. And why did that happen? It happened because defending takedowns is a lot of work. Why don't we just never be in a position for you to grab me? If you can't put your hands on me and I'm better at you striking you coming in, this works. So screw takedown defense. We don't need it to exist. Of course, if you do get in there, then we're going to go and work the old school way. So the answer to that is we must get a hold of you. And that's where we have to solve it. And damn it, if the guy to study isn't Damian Maia. Because Damian Maia, And Khabib, but Damian Maia, we think of his submissions, we think of his rear naked choke, story, or we think of getting Condit's back. But the magic that is not currently being heavily studied is the concepts between him going from outside of your touching range, to an entire body lock. And the interesting fight to see is, can he do that to somebody who's a master of stopping that, like Stephen Thompson? That's the fight you got to see, Stephen Thompson. And because if he can, then he has the answer. And then that answer needs to be studied. And that answer supersedes the range answer, which then the range answer will need to supersede that. And that'll keep happening. Khabib, when he gets you and he gets you onto a hip ride or gets control, he destroys you. But he doesn't get in as effortlessly as Damian Maia. So those are the guys to study now. I'm going to try to move a little quicker. I apologize. I'm enjoying this a great deal. Why does Rousey only talk to non... Oh, let's do this one first. How do you see the role as an analyst evolve in regards to educating people about fighting and its philosophy? Okay, that's cool. Thank you. I think ultimately the biggest thing, and again, I'm now going to seek ways to talk about this without criticizing what has come before. So if I'm going to look for find the way to do that, it is acknowledging that there are plenty of good reasons and that it is a natural progression that when people at one time, let me cut myself off there. What I was saying why I should not criticize is because criticizing like that, especially when you generalize with a whole bunch of people you don't know and say they do, that's gossip. And there are three types of language. There is the language of gossip, the language of the warrior, and the language of truth. And the language of gossip is really entrenched in our world right now. Having an opinion on something that is, either just formed or a reactionary opinion or created by conflict is gossip. Gossip is growing up and hearing your parents say something about the neighbors that they've never even met. And gossip is everything you saw on reality shows. And we see it everywhere. It's everywhere. It's the primary form of communication that we use. And it's very harmful. It's a virus. It's harmful. That's why when I'm looking, I'm like, I'm doing it. And we're all doing it. And we got to stop doing it. It's harmful. Regardless of what you think of the president or the woman who ran against him for president, gossip was a huge part of that process. And it was a huge part of how the media shared stuff. It's ingrained in us. and there's a big negativity to it, and you react negatively. You see me reacting negatively, and I'm consciously trying not to. That's on me. People who are not consciously trying not to, just go straight to a message board, and they react. Rhonda says something about her opponent. That is a form of gossip, or it's negativity, or it's rude. People's reaction, negativity breeds negativity. Anytime I put it out into the world, I've got it back. And that's on me. And when you put it out into the world, you get it back. And when fighters put it out into the world, they get it back. And when media goes in and tries to stimulate that between them, that he said this and he said that, but no, he said, but what did he mean? What did they mean? What did this guy mean when he said this about the UFC? Oh my God. All of that is very, very negative. The language of the warrior is the language that we're trying to speak. Now, that's a coincidence. This, again, comes from that book, The Four Agreements, the concept of which is that everything is an agreement. This is paper. We all agreed on what letters we were going to use, and then we agreed on a word. This is not paper. This is whatever this is. This is not white. We agree on those things. We agree on what words mean, what expressions are, what ideas are, what truth is. We agree on laws. We agree on leadership. We agree on all. These are just agreements. Society works when we all as a collective agree on a bunch of stuff. So because of those agreements that are kind of odd and there are flaws in how they are, we gossip. So the language of the warrior is what's happening when you're attempting to cure that in yourself. So you're seeking that, you're desiring to not be one of those people. And this happens to be going around a lot. If you go to Vice.com, Vice.com just relaunched their website. They took off all comments. They just removed them. And they removed them. They wrote and they said, we love to talk to you. By all means, reach out to us on any of a bunch of other things. But most of this degrades into a cesspool of racism and homophobia and rudeness and gossip. And then the language of the warrior is your language with yourself when you're trying desperately to cure yourself of that. I am not succeeding yet. Maybe little bits, but I failed royally today when I rudely discussed other people and the way that they work. And there's an aspect to the job that I'm doing at the desk that I know if I am more meticulous with my words and if I speak the language of the warrior, that not only I don't think TV has to be that way, and I also think that you have the ability different, we said was good. Different is good. Scarcity is powerful. Scarcity has value. So if you can be different than everybody who's gossiping, that's powerful. So I think the philosophical aspects of fighting, if you study fighting, is trying to take you to improvement, trying to take you to learning more about learning more. And I really think that's part of it. The analysis aspect, I think, is once you do that, once you say, I am not going to comment on if Aldo claimed that he's got an interim, but Connor's a coward, but Rhonda's not going to talk to the media because they did this, and this guy, Chris, says he's coming back, but he's not sure Gegard. If we remove that, if we all, over time, do what Vice magazine did and do what I'm talking about here, and we all do it together, then you have to talk about something. You'll have to talk about something. And that thing will be the martial arts. It will be the analysis of what happens physically and mentally and technically and with skill and with art and with heart and desire and the body and learning and growing. And that'll be the only thing left. So the language of the warrior, if you fight it and you speak it and you seek to speak it, it might take you forever. You may never win that. I may never win this battle. I don't want to be talking like that. I don't want to be thinking that way. But I'm trying that language of the warrior on myself to try not to be like that. And it takes a lot of work. But if we succeed, we will speak the language of truth. And the language of truth is when we are no longer consumed by gossip. Gossip also leads to our negative things about ourselves, the negative reactions to our friends and to our loved ones, and projecting your ideas on somebody. All that negativity is incredibly bad for the society that we live in. And you only start to see it when you start to see it. Once you start to look at it and you identify it as that, and again, I'm not here to criticize. It is not the fault of whether it's Bloody Elbow or MMA Junkie or MMA Fighting or Sure Dog, and I would just list them all because I'm not picking on any of them. It is not their fault. It is not any of our faults. We're taught this from the time that we're young. The same way I teach Pluto to either poop on the rug or to not poop on the rug, we all were taught this. And once we actively seek to unteach ourselves of it, maybe then we get rid of it. Once we get rid of it, we are staring at the truth of fighting. We're staring at the truth of martial arts. We are staring at the truth of what it is to go in, dedicate your life to that type of beautiful expression, and that's what we'll be left with. And do I think this is possible? I think it's a lot more possible if we try not. I've wasted. And maybe it's not a waste because I've learned, but I've wasted a lot of time and energy the last couple of years trying to stamp out this stuff. I'm just throwing negativity at negativity. That's not right. I'm wasting my breath. But I needed to do that long enough to realize that I was wasting my breath. And once we approach it from the idea of what we're, that there's value in what we're looking for, the lies and the gossip that is ingrained in us from the time that we're children and the way our society works, we have to seek getting rid of it. But I see that out there. Vice.com is one perfect example. There's a movement towards this. Everybody realizes how bad this is. Not everybody. See, I just did that. That's wrong. Everybody doesn't. Some people are starting to realize the dangers of this, and it isn't the world of fighting. This is politics, it's there, and in music, it's there, and in every piece. And media is the number one reason. And it's, again, it's not their fault. It's a function of how society has worked. And so if we do that over time, all we're left with is the beauty of the martial arts. And that leads me to, why does Ronda only talk to non-MMA media? What is she afraid of? I think, other than guessing, you know, or trying to think if it was me, what would I think she's hurt. I think she's hurt. I think she is, I don't think she's looking at it and saying to herself, you know, I did all these things and therefore I deserve to be made fun of and mocked and said hurtful things. And every time I even just open up something that is connected to the internet, I see the most horrible things about myself. I think she's hurt. And I think her reaction to hurt is to move away from it. And I think that's normal. I hope she does well. I really do. I hope she does well. It's a scary thing to insulate yourself and then expect the best out of yourself on one night, from zero to a packed arena. But she's a special athlete and a special person, so hopefully she can do it. Okay, a couple. So this one I've pushed off a couple times. We're going to push it off again, and we're going to come back to it. But weight cutting. Why are these rigid rules necessary? Weight cutting is still a mystery to many people. There is a really good explanation based on people seeking advantages and the natural arms race of how people work. And we'll talk about that next time. Maybe our New Year's Eve show. And there's a lot of things it relates to in our lives and in society and in fighting and in war and in many things. And so there's a real interesting thing there, and I will do my best and we'll try to get back to it. And thank you for the question. Who do you have winning the Celebrity Apprentice? I was about to like make some like hip hop symbol, but as I may have mentioned, I feel like a tool when I act like that now at 47 years old. But Chael Sonnen is going to win. It's like at the Vince Neil or at Chael Sonnen. Who do you have winning the Celebrity Apprentice? Chael's going to win. Chael is way too smart and way too clever and way too crafty and way too driven. Chael's going to win. Oh, it's Bobby T. Bobby T, 52. Bobby is our senior producer or our executive producer. I don't know what exactly. I think Glenn is our executive producer, but they're two of the best dudes you're going to meet. Very much they love their job and they want to make the best TV possible. And I have learned a lot from them. You talk about mentors. I've learned a lot from them. Glenn McDonald, in the very first thing he said when we were going to start five rounds, he said, "The structure is there is no structure." And we were like, "What do you mean? What do you mean?" Like, he literally just put a tick on the board. And that allowed us to go explore. And all he's a great leader, often in just sort of opening things up for you. And Bobby's a killer dude and very, very smart. And they're great. And they really are. Follow at BobbyT52. And when he says at the Vince Neil, it makes more sense now. Bobby's obsessed with Vince Neil. So, and last question. Thank you again. Thank you for hanging out with me, and thank you for watching. Hashtag Ask Robin Black? I think it's just Ask Robin Black. Makes sense, right? Hashtag? I mean, old people don't say that, do they? But thank you, and this is episode 4. Thank you for sharing it and passing it around, and thank you for the great feedback. Do you still sing or just talk MMA? At Skaterboy010. My wife is a high-level professional singer, and the first night I told her I love her, I think, was after I watched her do the lead role in We Will Rock You, which is the music of Queen. She sung Freddie Mercury songs, Queen songs, 8 times a week. She's a genius. And I really realized then how much I loved performing, but I loved performing, and I loved trying to write, and I loved trying to create. I don't have the same passion about music itself at all. I love music. I put it on when I need a break, and I put it on. It feels great. But if I was as curious about music and as if it was my calling, I would have spent as much effort learning it and studying it and adapting to it and growing with it as I have to fighting. And I just didn't do that. Also, I can't really sing. So it's really fucking weird that I was, for 10 years, I was able to, and I'm very proud of it in its own weird, twisted way, that I was able to, without any quality as a singer, in fact, very rudimentary singer, very low-level singer. I made 2 great albums. I had great producers work with us. We toured, you know, England and Canada and Italy and dozens of times. And people were fans of it, and we entertained people. I'm very proud that we could do that. What I am not proud of is that I didn't work to improve. And that's a lesson I took away from that, is why didn't I just work to get better at the thing? And I really understood that when I started doing this job. It was, put your head down, you don't need attention, and quietly get as good as you can at this, and don't bug anybody, and don't go after, you know, I didn't go, Joe Rogan ultimately, and Chael were key people that helped me, and I didn't go bother them or tell them to look at my shit, you know, because it wasn't good enough. And when I was a singer, I'd be like, let's send this to all the record companies. You're not a good singer. You're not a good singer. You work on it. And these are the types of things you go in and you apprentice and you study and you put your head down and you dedicate to your craft for a long period of time. And by the time Joe brought me on a show, I was not bad at what I did. And he had found it or been, I'd shared it on the internet. He was like, hey, I like what this guy did. But that took 4 years or 5 years or 6 years, whatever it took from the time I started analyzing fighting, plus the 6 years of studying fighting and all, and everything I ever learned in television and playing in music. So let's call it 20 years. It took that long of compiling, trying and failure and studying and the failure of doing music. And I guess it was successful in some ways, but the failure of not building the skill, that was a big failure. And I used that lesson to get to concentrate on the building of the skill more than the building of a brand or a reputation or whatever. So that by the time we made this podcast, I couldn't believe it. Like, people wanted to see it. You know, they actually wanted to, like, hear what I had to say. And that is different than most cases, where first you make a podcast, then you get good, and then you hope to find somebody. By the time we put this out, there were people who were like, yeah, that guy has developed some amount of skill in this area, and he's developed something of his own, and let's hear what he has to say. And I can't thank you guys enough for that. I really can't. It's really, really, truly humbling, and I'm really grateful for that. And thanks for hanging out with me. Black out.